Thanks, John, again. At this time, we'll be passing the basket. Our group has asked Miss Pat to be our main speaker for tonight.
My sobriety date is June the 3rd, 1977. Woo! That means that I've been sober longer than a whole heck of a lot of you guys. I was born in Columbus, Ohio. I did all my drinking up there, too. I knew every alley there was. I knew all of them. So I, you know, carried them on. I was a nurse for 50 years. if you don't know that nurses work hard, I am here to tell you that nurses work hard. And back then, we didn't have a whole heck of a lot of help. So I did all the lifting, tugging, and pulling that needed to be done. And I had the back and the legs to prove it. I had my first drink as a medicinal deal. I had a sick stomach and my mother gave me hot water, whiskey, and sugar, which I promptly put all over the wall. Down, out. And that was to be an idea of what my drinking was gonna be like. You know, I could have been the president of Barfers Anonymous. I really could have. I drank some during my younger years. I remember that Mom and Dad had people over for, it was right after the war, the Second World War, that one. The war. And so there was no money, you know, so people would get a 12-pack of beer and they'd bring it in, and Dad had whiskey. And they were, you know, what I noticed is that there was this calm that came over them, and there was a lot of laughter that came on. And unlike everybody else, I didn't feel good in my own skin. And so I used to drink out of those cans that were left. Both my parents smoked. They used beer cans as ashtrays. I swallowed a cigarette butt. And then I started pouring it through a, you know, strainer. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Because I wanted what they had. I wanted that calmness. I wanted to feel comfortable. So I didn't, you know, like, I didn't get a chance to do a heck of a lot of drinking early. I was 21 years old, actually, before I had a real night out. And I had a date. And back, you know, I didn't date a lot. I was busy. I went to school, and then I went to nurses training, and then I had a job, and I was busy. And my sister had this ship. I did bring this one fellow home, and he took one look at my sister, who was gorgeous. Oh, my God, my sister is drop-dead gorgeous. And he no longer saw me. So he brought a friend one night, and I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. I was so uncomfortable. So I walked into the kitchen, and there was this bottle of Ancient Age, and you remember when those cups started? The one of those cups? You remember when we first got those? You probably don't, but that's okay. I poured whiskey to just about that far from the top. I put one ice cube in it, a little bit of Pepsi, and I drank it. And then I made another one, and I drank it. And then I got really hot. And it was snowing outside, and I went outside. And I am standing the icy, you know, icy stuff. And my mother said, you need to go to bed. You have to work in the morning. And my young man who came over helped my mother get me upstairs. That means he took me by the arms and pushed me upstairs. And I don't know what happens to you when you lay down when you're drunk. The room is moving. There's a bucket on the floor. My dad is down at my feet, and he's just patting me on the foot. And he's saying, honey, you're going to be okay. It'll be all right. And then I barf. And I barf. And I barf. And I barf. And then I passed out. At 4 o'clock in the morning, my mother was beside my bed, and she had her arms crossed, and she said, if you can drink at night, you can, by God, go to work in the morning. I want you to know I never missed a day at work because of alcohol. That doesn't mean that I didn't drink a whole heck of a lot, because I was a daily drinker in my 20s. And when I got to my 30s, I became a periodic drinker. I thought it was better. You know, you are better if you don't do it every day. But every time I drank, I got drunk. I remember going to the apartment lounge, and they had swizzle sticks in their drinks. And I said, I'm only going to have four. And when I got home and I reached in my pocket, I had that many swizzle sticks. And I, you know, I just did it over and over and over and over and over. And then I married Ralph. Ralph is the father of my little boy, who is now 50. And, oh boy, he was a character. We argued a lot. We had fights a lot. And this one night, I made up my mind I was going to kill him. Enough is enough. I started being beaten around. Enough of this is enough. And my husband was an ex-Army guy. And he, anyway, the long and the short of it was, I'm standing in the kitchen. And I've got the knife. I've got the knife. And I'm going to put it in up, you know, to that far below his chest and up. And I know that it's gonna work. And you can believe this or not, God said, I think it was God because it was as loud as my voice is tonight. And the voice said, if you kill him, you're going to Marysville. Marysville is a maximum security prison for women in the state of Ohio. And I said to the voice, what should I do? And the voice said, go to bed, you have to work in the morning. I'm still not sober. I want you to know that. So I went to bed, and in the morning, he told me he wasn't allowed to take my son out of the house. And I took him to my friend, and I knew he could never find a baby. And so I took him over to my friend's house, and she was to be my babysitter until he left. And he called me up, and he said, I told you not to take Jason out of the house. And I said, as long as alcohol is your God, There's nothing, you know, you can't be a father. It wasn't too long after that, I remember, I put him through treatment twice. I was in the eyes. I did this, I did that, I did the other. Anyway, I remember he said, there was a time years ago when you could go anywhere in the United States for $49 on a Greyhound bus. And he said, I'm going to Las Vegas. I said, okay. And so he asked me for money, and I went to the bank, our bank, and I gave him all but $25. And I took him to the bus station, and I waited until 2:30 in the morning, and he got on the bus. And I saw him one time and heard from him one time. He passed away, three years ago. Anyway, it was shortly thereafter, I remember kneeling beside my bed and going, God, I can't do this anymore. This is not working. And so I started into Alcoholics Anonymous. My first meeting was at Central Office. There was a fellow that worked at Central Office, and he just grinned all over. He didn't have any teeth. and he just laughed. And it'd be time for the meeting. He said, Pat, the answer is in there. And so I'd go in and I'd sit down and listen to the people who were going to tell me how to stay sober, because I didn't know how to stay sober. And there was one fellow that was there. He was as tall as I am. He was very black. God bless his heart. His name was Charles. And I would walk into Central Office, and he would look at my face, and he'd say, Pat, I think we need to go for a walk. And I said, Charles, okay. No, whatever you say, I'll go. Anyway, we went over to the park, and depending on how long it took me to calm down and not be angry anymore, we would go around the park maybe one time, one or two times. We had to go around four times before I was down, you know, at a little more. I forgot to tell you what kind of a drunk I was, didn't I? I came out from work one day. This is just one of the times. And Ralph's girlfriend, we were married at that time, Ralph's girlfriend had cut my brakes. And I had to get to the saloon. And I got on the freeway with no brakes. Because I knew that at Hudson Street, you had to go up a hill. So I wouldn't put any gas from about 17th all the way to Hudson Street, and I just roll up and go around the corner. And there was a filling station there, and it was open late. That's all I know. And I went in and I said, there's something wrong with my brakes. But can you give me a ride to the saloon? And he said, yes, I can. And so he sent me to the saloon and I need to fix it. She did that twice. The second time he said, somebody's cutting your brakes. I said, I know. Can you take me to the saloon? Very important. Oh, we were kids, let me tell you. Anyway, after he left, I saw him once in Montreal at the conference. He told me that when he went west, he was going to change his name to Leon. And when he introduced himself to me in Montreal, he told me his name was Leon. But if you slept with somebody, you know what they smell like. And so I walked up to him and I said, "Hi, my name is Pat Mesmer." And he said, "Hi, my name is Leon." And he suggested I go in to hear this lady from California. And I just did what he said. I got another call from him. He was in Huntsville, Texas. Yeah. There's a prison in Huntsville, Texas. And he called me and told me that I had talked until 6, about 3 o'clock, something like that in the morning. I was trying to make amends. "I want you to know that I was going to kill you that night." And he said, "Oh, Pat, if you had come near me, I'd kill you." And I believe that to be true. So all my life, I have had angels in my life, both drinking and sober. I was very suicidal when I got here, and I was doing issues and physicals, and this lady came on board for an issue and physical, and she said to me, "I'm ready to go home." Well, I'm suicidal. I thought she was too. And she looked at my face and she said, "Oh, young lady, you don't understand. I'm ready to go home, but I must wait until I'm invited." And from that day, that isn't going to say it, it doesn't walk through your brain. If you're suicidal, it will come every once in a while. Things are going bad, or sometimes when things are going good, it will just come through your brain. And now I just go, "That lady told me I have to wait until I'm invited." And so I'm here for the duration. I want you to know my mother and my grandmother died when they were 80. I am now 86. Somebody's going to raise their hand when it's time to shut up, right?
He is. Okay.
Gosh. So, I had a hate on for my mother when I came into program, because when I was 5, she set me on the counter and slapped me in the face and said not kind things to me. And when I was 18 or so, I had a date with a young man, and I had an argument with my little sister, who was their favorite, and she came into the kitchen and she beat on my arm and she said, "I wish you had never been born." So I had a lot of reasons, you know, to believe that I wasn't any good. But my dad, he loved all of his children. He was an orphan when he was a young man, and he loved his children. He loved his wife. And he told me when I was coming, I've been coming to the program for about 8 years, and he said, "Patty, please keep going to those meetings because they're helping you." And so I've come to these meetings because they help me. It is a wonderful thing to have Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember my sponsor said to me, "If you're thinking, call me immediately." And I tested that once. And I said, "Patty, I'm thinking." And she said, when she became my sponsor, she showed me her house so that I would know where she was going to be. And I went to her house and we talked it out. I know that if I speak it out to a person who has had a sponsor or whatever, if I speak it out to them, I diffuse it, you know. But if I keep it in my head, I know that my head can't fix what I'm thinking. It can't. And I tested that for a little while. You know, I thought if I got the 10, I'd be wonderful. And 10 to 15, I was absolutely batshit crazy. And, you know, I just know those things to be true. I never. How are we doing on time? Still?
We have 20 minutes.
What? Okay. So I was 34 years sober when I came down to Florida. And there was a fellow at one of the meetings that I, not, he was from one of the meetings that I went to, a home. And he said to me, when you go to Florida, act like a newcomer. And I said, why? He said, they've been sober down in Florida for a whole long time. And they probably don't need you to tell them how to do it. So I came down to Florida, and I raised my hand, and I said, we just moved to Florida from Ohio. And I didn't tell anybody how to do it, you know. It may have been different, but it didn't feel different. It felt like Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never been, and I've been a few other places in the country, but it always feels like Alcoholics Anonymous. I spoke once in Las Vegas, because we were there, and I had the opportunity to go to a meeting, and they asked me to speak, and I did. And I did one in Carolinas. It isn't any different. We drink, we get into trouble, we get a sponsor, and they know more than we do. It always used to amaze me. Patty said, I want you to get on your knees and ask God to keep you sober today. I want you to read from the book. She never, ever told me what to read. Never. And I would open the book, and I had this thing going on, and I'd open the book, and it would be the exact thing that I needed to read that day. And I thought, how did she get so smart? You know, I was like, that's how that is. And so I've been so blessed. I didn't tell you my home group is the world famous Monday Night Speakers Group in the sobriety capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Woo! And I love it. It is as crazy in that meeting as it is at my home group in Columbus, Ohio, which is the world famous Good Morning Breakfast Group. And they say, in the sobriety capital of the world, Columbus, Ohio. So I'm in all the sobriety capitals. I bet if you really like this group, that you, when you talk about it, you say, I go to meetings in the sobriety capital of the world. Say, no. What a blessing. I forgot to say thank you to John. Where is John? Hi, John. Boy, you did a nice job tonight. Thank you so much. It was beautiful. Thank you. He was very succinct in his description. Isn't that wonderful? That you can say it in so few words, and yet it's just what everybody needs. What do you guys have about the lights? Anyway, my sponsor now is Miss Kelly. She's speaking on the 23rd. Get a chance, come. She's a great speaker. And I'll tell you a little secret about Miss Kelly. She had a stroke 5 or 6 years ago, and it took her speech She got a speech therapist, and she practiced, and she practiced, and she practiced. And now, you never know, she had one. So, what a blessing she is to my life. She just, oh,
what does that mean? I have 15 minutes or 15 seconds?
Oh my gosh. I am so blessed. I'm blessed to be here, and I'm blessed that y'all aren't moving around very much. I do appreciate that. Let me tell you what my rules were when I got here. That doesn't mean they were my rules. That means they were my sponsor's rules. She said, if you drink 2 cups of coffee, get both of them before you get to your seat. She said, if you want anything to eat, get it before you go to the seat. Put your phone in your purse. And there's no talking or moving from prayer to prayer. And that's how I was trained. And I am, boy, she's a smart woman. What a smart woman she was. And we lost her in February. She was 50-some years sober. I don't remember the exact number. She had 9 kids. Her husband committed suicide, and she did not drink. Her youngest son committed suicide, and she did not drink. So by her behavior, she taught me what I needed to know about staying sober, just by her behavior. I have to tell you, when I got here, I knew everything. I knew everything. And she just let me out there, and I just dangling out there knowing everything. One day I went to her and I said, I don't know what to do here. And she said, you're right, you don't know anything. So we can come here and be the smartest person in the room, and we'll still get sober if we hang with a sponsor. It can happen. That's what's so amazing to me, is that we can be whatever we are, and we can still get sober. Is that wonderful or what? There are some people that I know, he's one of them, and she's one of them, and she's one of them. Who else do I know? A whole bunch of other people in this room that I know, because they've come to Monday night, and I've had the opportunity and the privilege to hear them speak. And they have helped me stay sober, and they have been my friend, and they have carried me during tough times. My husband passed away in 2011, and he went to a nursing home because he was speaking someplace, and he had cancer right there in this part of his mouth, and he had cancer. And it was not an easy time. But when he came home, he never missed a meeting. He was so tired that he'd be in bed most of the day. But at 6:15, he was up, sat in his wheelchair, we went out the door, we got into the car, and we went to a meeting. That says that there's no excuse not to stay part of the program. He was smart as a whip. We argued a little. He said to me one time, he said, if I hadn't gotten drunk that time, I'd have more time than you do. I said, but you did. He didn't like that. I didn't tell you that I've been married more than 2 and less than 10. It always seemed like a good idea at the time. But after Jerry died, I said, I don't think I want to do that anymore. So I live by myself. I have 396 square feet in my little mobile home. And I just got a new air conditioner for it, taking good care of it. And I go to Monday Night Speakers. I go to 49ers on Thursday because they have a meditation meeting. And there's, if you don't go to a meditation meeting, please, please try it. It's so good for your soul. It is just so good for your soul. And then I did stay for the speaker meeting. On Wednesday night, I go to Church Around the Steppers, and then I go to 2250s. What a great meeting both of those two are. So I hear one speaker at Percheron, and I hear at least two, sometimes three, at 2250. I love meetings. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You guys are my family.
No?
And I am so grateful that you love me. And I'm grateful that you're here. And I don't know how else to express it. It has been an absolutely beautiful evening. My young lady picked me up at my house because I don't drive to Tampa. I used to drive, but I'm 86. You know, I'm kind of better off the road. I drive to my home group. I drive to 49ers. I drive to get my hair fixed. I get my car washed. But other than that, I just don't do a lot of driving. It just doesn't make sense to me. I figure if the car dies, God's telling me it's, you're done driving. But up until now, I like to drive. So, I'm running out of things to say, and my back has said it's time to sit down. And I so appreciate your attention. You guys are wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. At this time, will you pass the basket, of course, for our session?